But Hungary, they do not use the euro.
That actually surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, Hungary is part of Schengen. However, they are not part of the eurozone. And so they use the Hungarian forint. And it's something like one Hungarian forint is 3/1,000ths of a dollar.
Okay. That's a weird number to have to do your math in your head, I guess.
Yeah. So what I think I ended up doing was, I think it was 3,000 forints was $10. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about Thanksgiving Day travel. Tom, how are you?
Pretty good. I think maybe a little bit better than you. I see you're a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, I probably sound a little bit froggy or scratchy. I picked up a souvenir that we never want to pick up while we're on travel.
The worst souvenir.
I suppose the worst would be like Deli Belly. But oh, yeah, a cold okay. is certainly not not a desirable thing.
They're both pretty bad souvenirs. They're both in the leave behind bin. But this man's a trooper, you know, for the listeners, right? He's going to soldier through this thing.
Well, we do love our listeners. So we're going to talk about two different trips this episode. We did something, I think, different this year. Most years, we actually come together and celebrate with both of our families for a little Thanksgiving brunch. But this year, I think you went west and my family went east.
That's right. We went in opposite directions.
So let's get into it, Tom. You went west. I suppose that's the good old Horace Greeley adage, go west, young man. Where'd you go? How was the trip?
I'll give you one guess.
Well, let's see. If you went west, you probably didn't get on a cruise ship. So I'm thinking that you must have gone to Las Vegas, maybe?
I made it easy for you. Yes, I went to my home away from home, Las Vegas. I had a comp stay at Encore, which is part of the Wynn Resort, my first time there, and also managed to grab, I thought, a really nice flight out there. And let me go ahead and surprise everybody. It was on Spirit. That was my nice flight, believe it or not.
I still have a level of skepticism. You speak highly of Spirit. Like, you speak more highly of Spirit than anyone speaks of, like, American Airlines. And I have to believe the only reason that you can do that day in and day out is because you go in with, like, virtually no expectations. I have to believe that.
I do go in pretty low expectations, especially of a bankrupt airline. But you know what? It makes it easy when they are, like, kind of improving their levels of service as we speak. Like, literally, the reason what I kind of chose them was they sent out an email to their gold members. And they were like, hey, we're going to give you a free upgrade on any flight you like to a big front seat. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to maximize. I'm going to go ahead and take you up on that offer. So I booked a flight out to Las Vegas and got a free upgrade to big front seat. And they've improved it. You know, it used to be that big front seat was just a little bit more space, but you'd still pay for drinks. You'd still pay for food. Nope. Now it's unlimited drink, unlimited food, unlimited snacks. Food is a kind of a loose term still on Spirit Airways or Spirit Airlines. But my Diet Coke, on the other hand, was kept pretty full for most of the flight, which is, you know, a non-insignificant 5-hour nonstop flight from Baltimore to Las Vegas.
Free flowing Diet Coke. I mean, that's especially right. With the cost of Diet Coke now. I mean, that's, that bankruptcy, they're going the other way. This is not cost cutting.
No, it's not cost cutting. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. And, you know, all the flight crew was great. Even the check-in agent was surprisingly friendly. Like, I was not team check on this time. I actually did check a bag. And, you know, they were very nice when they checked in. They even said, ooh, big front seat. I guess, are you going to make use of all the unlimited drinks? And I said, nah, probably not. I'm a cheap date. But, you know, even my bag came out of the baggage claim, like, super fast, you know. I was really impressed. Again, I think it's because believe me, I've had bad Spirit flights, and mind you, most of them have been more than a decade ago. So I've not always had the best opinion of Spirit, but honestly, you know, you go in with the right attitude, sometimes you're pleasantly surprised, and I was pleasantly surprised on this flight.
And you got off the flight with good spirits.
I did.
Good spirits, I should say.
And I even had some good spirits. You know, I had one of those little buzz boxes of margarita or whatever. I didn't finish it because I'm a cheap date, but you know, I did order one because I felt like I had no choice. You know, come on, you're on Spirit.
You felt obligated.
Yeah. Felt obligated. Yeah.
They're known for that. It's the Spirit of buzz boxes and balls. Yeah. Buzz balls. It used to be buzz balls, right? Now they're buzz boxes. Now that's a little bit more PC, I think.
Yes. Yes. They've got margarita and Long Island iced tea. Oh, and they also give you a code for the Wi-Fi. So I think Big Frenzy comes with a Wi-Fi code too.
I didn't even know Spirit had Wi-Fi. Oh, I suppose that's like a basic requirement nowadays.
It's surprising. I think that was my first time ever.
United doesn't even have reliable Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I think that was my first time using Spirit Wi-Fi too. So that also, and it actually worked. So once again, you know, like I'm very surprised. It was, you know, it's like a legacy airline for the most part, except, you know, no hot meal. Otherwise, everything was pretty much the same.
You speak so highly of Spirit. And I just feel like the only way you can do that is going in with like no expectations or very low expectations. Well,
yeah, I don't think I want any listeners to be like, but you know, TK said Spirit was good. And I'm like, well, okay, yes, this is one data point. So please don't blame me if your Spirit Airlines flight is not amazing. But I'll say I did have a reasonably good one. And it did help that I was sitting in the front.
Well, that's awesome. So you've made it to your home away from home. Now, usually you prefer a particular, shall we say, South American themed hotel. Were you there or did you cheat on them?
I managed to go somewhere else first. Again, I went to Encore, which I was very excited about and also did not disappoint when it came to the rooms. It did disappoint me a little because I had to pay for internet for the first time at a hotel and I don't know how long. I was on a comp stay, so I didn't have to pay the resort fee. But the downside of not having to pay the resort fee is you don't get free internet. You have to pay for it. And it's so odd to think that they would actually like go to the point of not giving you the Wi-Fi that comes with the resort fee when they don't charge you the resort fee, but that is something that Wynn and Encore do. So just be prepared. I think I probably should have been a little bit set up better. I would have just used hotspot probably. But, you know, first thing in the morning, I was trying to, you know, do some stuff and I was like, ugh, I'll just pay for this one night. And then the next day I set myself up properly and I did a hotspot and some other stuff. But the first night I did end up paying $20.
Ooh, $20. So far, this episode is all about Wi-Fi. I can tell you it's not going to stay that way. You know, the dad joke in me has to say, you know, your first episode, your first stay at Wynn is at the Encore. Usually that comes second.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, listeners, please put in the comments, stop with the dad jokes. You know?
I don't know. It probably lays a little bit deadpan with my scratchy voice too, unfortunately.
I don't know. Maybe there's some people who like the dad jokes.
So you stayed at the Encore for the first time. And then did you stay there the entire time or did you go elsewhere?
I didn't. I went to my home away from home. As you said, the aforementioned South American themed hotel known as the Rio, the Mecca for globalists of the world. It really is. I mean, I can't think of probably, can you think of a hotel that has probably more globalists on average, at least Sunday through Thursday, than the Rio?
No, I could not. I mean, at one point we called it the home of globos, right?
Yes, yes. It is definitely a global home. I will just say one more quick thing. You know, the Encore, let me just finish that off first. Encore is very beautiful. The hotel rooms are beautiful. I had a wonderful view. I had a view of the Sphere and the Strip. Only downside is, I guess I'm cost conscious enough that I ended up going into five-star famine mode because all the restaurants at Wynn and Encore are all, you know, very, very much Strip prices. And I didn't really have any food credits or anything. So that is one thing. I think I'll be better prepared next time. And I probably may even stay there again in the near future because, you know, my birthday month is December. And one of the nice things about doing my Wynn Platinum match I did some time ago is I actually get some food credit for my birthday month.
Oh, that sounds nice.
But yeah, I did also make the trek over to the Rio. And it seems like every time I stay there, they change the policy around the breakfast. Actually, they actually improved it. They went to a very limited menu and they actually went to a more expansive menu, still not the main menu. There's still some stuff not on there that is on the regular paying customer menu, but this one is pretty, like, probably like 80% of it. And yeah, I thought it was an improvement and I really did enjoy after my five-star famine going to Rio and getting some free stuff, you know? And the free stuff was actually more than just free breakfast, believe it or not. You want to hear about it?
Oh, yeah.
So believe it or not, Rio is more than just a hotel where people get globalist stays in. It's actually a casino too. So
they still have a casino, huh?
They still have a casino. Believe it or not, there's still a casino there. And if you do sign up, I have played at that casino. Not very much, actually. I maybe played prior to this day, maybe an hour at slot machines, if that. And you know who I met over there is a good friend of ours, a friend of the show, Deb Schroeder. She happened to be in Las Vegas and staying at the Rio as well.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. You know, and I'll give her a shout out. She actually reached out and sent a toy for the Toys for Tots and Happy Hour that'll have happened after the show posts. So, you know, many thanks, Deb, for supporting a cause that is near and dear to our hearts.
Well, and Deb contributed another tip to me. She said, you know, you should just scan your card in the loyalty kiosk just to see what you can get. And I did that. And there, lo and behold, there were a whole bunch of free show tickets. So, oh, wow. You know, there was several shows that were in my loyalty desk kiosk menu. There was kind of a variety show called Wow, which I did watch. I had tickets to the comedy show. They did also have Chippendales, although I did not go to the Chippendales.
Although, I was about to say, do they still do that Thunder from Down Under, or what is it?
I think that's at Excalibur, actually.
Chippendales.
It's the Chippendales is what is at Rio, but apparently not much longer because the Chippendales are leaving Rio. They're moving, I think, back to some Caesars property of some sort, I think. So they're only there for another month or so. But yeah, no, I really wasn't feeling Chippendales, so did not go there. But, you know, getting two free show tickets, I mean, that was pretty nice. And actually, I had pretty low, again, low expectations for both of these things. Because they were free. But there were people paying good money for them, and they were very entertaining. I thought the variety show was probably about the same, or if not a slightly better than what you might have as a variety show on a cruise ship or something like that. And the comedy show, there was at least one comedian that I actually recognized from some TV shows that I've watched. He was one of the character actors on like Mad Men and Billions. It was a comedian that was doing a set during the comedy show.
Oh, cool. So a nice little holiday surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. And Deb joined me for the comedy show, which was nice. So, yeah, it was great. So, you know, again, not only did I get free breakfast, I got free entertainment. I was a profitable customer for Rio, though. I did play some craps and left a couple $100 donation there for them for Dreamscape. And hopefully they'll make good use of it. But, you know, I had my usual good Rio stay at very cheap rate, less than $30, I think, or probably $30-$35. I think, actually, I remember now, I booked one of the rates that has a dining credit. So I also was able to make use of the Luckley's, which is one of their new dining venues. It's in the center of the casino. I had like a cheesesteak, I think, I had like a chicken parm and some pigs in a blanket. And those were just okay. I wouldn't necessarily say that that's a great place, but the food court is quite good. I had some of the chicken fingers from Tender Crisp and Tony and Luke's steak and cheese, and those are both excellent.
You know, there was a gentleman that passed away over the weekend, and his last name escapes me. When you mentioned Mad Men, I think it's like Art Glazer or something. He was big on the New York Stock Exchange, and he used to call pigs in a blanket Irish caviar.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is we were sitting across at the comedy club, a couple from Wales, although I guess they're originally from another part of England. And we were talking about pigs in a blanket for a moment, and apparently pigs in a blanket is also something, but it's in something entirely different in Britain. So I think it's still cocktail wieners, but they wrap them in bacon. So the blanket is a blanket of bacon, not a blanket of puff pastry.
I think that actually sounds a lot better, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I guess it's more keto friendly.
I would think so. Okay, so you didn't stay in Vegas the entire time though, right? You ventured even further west.
I did, although that was my last hotel. Well, no, I guess not technically my last hotel stay. But yes, I went further west. I made a mileage run out of it. I was actually flying on Thanksgiving, which turned out to be not the best decision. I probably will not do a Thanksgiving mileage run in the future because I had, you know, wonderfully well-timed, upgraded, confirmed Alaska first class ticket through San Diego to Honolulu. And of course, we had air ops. And apparently San Diego got fogged in. Lost my upgrades, had to go through Seattle instead. So made my way in lovely coach all the way to Hawaii. And then, of course, my flight from Hawaii back to Seattle, that was also in coach on a red eye. But I guess it did end well in that I at least had still had one more red eye, but that red eye at least was confirmed in first. So yeah, it was a little bit less comfortable than I was planning, a little bit less in-flight dining than I was hoping for. But I did make it there. I was able to make my way to Hawaii and be there for a couple hours. I was able to check out the Hawaii Sky Club, which I have not been to in several years. I was kind of very nostalgic, actually, because I had been in that particular lounge many a time in past mileage runs or past trips to Honolulu. I did notice, and maybe they had it before, but it was new to me. I didn't realize they had actually quite something nice. They had shaved ice. Oh, and they also had turkey gravy and dressing and other things as well. So quite a few nice things at the Sky Club that day.
Well, you can't turn down good Sky Club.
You really can't. You know, they're pretty nice. And although, you know, you make the mistake of wearing a Hawaiian shirt and people were like, hey, what's the Wi-Fi password? I'm like, I don't know. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you don't work here.
You're just trying to fit in.
I guess I am. I didn't look that dissimilar from the other people working in the Sky Club. But, you know, it's funny. If you talk to my brother, he's like, somehow I always manage to like wear the color of shirts. I'm wearing like the navy blue shirt when I go to Best Buy. I'm wearing the red shirt when I go to Target. Or, you know, it's like, so I'm always like, people always think based on the way I guess I walk, or I'm very deliberate sometimes, I guess, in what I'm doing. So people are like, oh, this guy must work here.
Well, you walk with an air of confidence.
I think I do. Yeah, I do. I tend to walk around like I own the place. Yeah, sometimes. I suppose that's true. So people always think that I'm a worker there. I don't know to be offended or complimented. I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, go with a compliment, my friend. But obviously, knowing some of your Aloha shirts, if it was the one I was thinking you were wearing, I could totally see how they would think that you're an employee, because it's an underspoken or it's
understated.
It's understated.
Yes, it's not Aloha too loud. Shirt. It's not too loud.
So how'd you get home?
Also on Alaska. This is pretty much all in Alaska. And it was Alaska mileage run. I'm trying to get my 75K. I was just doing my math today. I actually called in and I ended up, they ended up manually crediting my Bogota Madrid flight finally, believe it or not. But the downside is I think I made a mistake in my math. I think I'm still about 6,000 miles away from the goalpost after all said and done. Oh, so no. there's at least one or two more transcons, or one and a half transcons, I think, out there.
That Spirit big front seat came back to bite you, huh?
Maybe. I should have just taken an Alaska flight. The Alaska flight would have been a lot more. But yeah, I'm going to have to think about what additional mileage running I'm going to do this month, which it's not going to be zero. I think I'm going to have to do a little bit more.
Ooh, that almost sounds painful in December. But I mean, you won't be alone. You know, how many other people will be there? I mean, the old days, you know, any December mileage run, you ran into other mileage runners and yes. You had a little bit of a camaraderie there.
It's fun running. It's kind of fun. Like pretty much nearly every trip this year, I've been running into people that I know, which is kind of funny, just randomly, like not in any scheduled way. So that's fun too, you know, just to have that, you know, you show up in a strange city. I'm like, oh, you're here. Oh, hey, let's hang out. Let's go have dinner. Let's go watch a movie or do something.
Nice. Okay. Any final thoughts on your Turkey Day trip?
No, I think it was pretty normal overall. I was pretty happy at the end of it. You know, I'm glad it was over. But I do enjoy flying Alaska. Even in coach, it was not totally miserable. Maybe some of the red eye part of it. But I know on the way out, at least I was able to get a whole row to myself, a whole exit row to myself for that matter. And that, you know, having poor man's first class is not so bad.
Very cool. Very cool. One thing I had to Google because I couldn't remember his last name, but that pigs in a blanket comment was Art Cashin, who passed away at 83 over the weekend.
Okay.
So I guess the weekend of like 1 December. Hate to get a name wrong, especially for somebody who's passed.
Well, I'm now excited to hear about your Turkey Day adventure. I know a little bit, you hinted on a little bit of it, but I think I'm hearing about the first time. So, you know, you're starting to earn the title Mr. Europe here. You're going to Europe all the time.
You know, my wife and I were talking about that, and we do try to get there, you know, once a quarter if we can. We usually skip the summer, or maybe not all the summer, you know, but we've just found that Europe is very friendly, very family friendly. And maybe it's family friendly for a family with a child our age. I know that as our daughter will get older, I know that others, you know, Sam and Robert have both commented that, you know, that they're in the have to book a two bedroom or book two rooms stage. We're not there yet. We're still in the stage where we can get away with one room. We just get like a pack and play or a baby crib, and that all works. So
take advantage of it while you can, I guess. All right.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
got to take advantage of it.
Yep. So can you kind of like sketch it out for me? So what cities did you visit?
Right. So in August, usually my family hosts, my brother hosts Thanksgiving. He decided that they were not going to, they traveled up to New York to his in-laws. And so they gave us notice probably about August. And we decided, okay, well, let's look for a trip. Around the same time, Spencer with the Straight to the Points Award Alerts came out with a Vienna to Dulles award, nonstop on Austrian, which turned out to be Austrian's new 787. And so we booked that immediately. And so there started the trip. At the same time, I booked three nights at the Park Hyatt Vienna. A little bit pricey, but a great redemption in my opinion. Vienna starts their Christmas markets early. So there were Christmas markets literally right on our front doorstep. But we still had to get there. And we waffled a bunch. Did we want to go to Madrid? Madrid didn't start Christmas markets early. We looked at Luxembourg. That was in the too hard column. Ultimately, we decided Budapest was a good answer. I had been there myself, but I hadn't brought the family yet. The Parisi Udvar is a wonderful, beautiful, beautiful hotel, former arcade, next to, you know, nestled among palaces. And so we ended up getting a United award out of Dulles, perfectly serviceable flight to Frankfurt. And then we flew Frankfurt onward to Budapest. Originally, we had a flight, I think it was still United, in Swiss, or via Zurich, and then on to Budapest at the 85K range before I was ready to commit on Aeroplan. And you can only downgrade to the Saver if there's Saver space available. I didn't realize that. I know that there was talk that you could do these things, but whether or not the Saver Space was available was not something that I recalled explicitly. So I just highlight that for our listeners. And because of that, we actually got a better setup. We got a shorter layover and we flew via Frankfurt versus Zurich. And we got in about 2 hours early.
Nice.
Unfortunately, getting into Budapest, I get an email saying that our stroller didn't make it. Especially perplexing because, and I'll pause to say that we have two strollers. We have one that we have to gate check and one that we put in the overhead. Because of the weather and the cobblestones and everything, we decided to take the bigger one that we gate check. It was perplexing because we were at a remote gate and my wife handed the stroller to a Lufthansa agent at the plane and somehow it didn't make it on the plane. I wish I had a window seat because I probably would have looked out and said, huh, why is our stroller just sitting on the tarmac? It took us until like 8 or 10 o'clock the night before we left to get our stroller back, which really put a damper on our time in Budapest.
Oh, I could see that. I could see your transportation being impacted.
Yeah, thankfully our three-year-old was willing to do some walking and then we were willing to carry her for some. So we were able to see three Christmas markets. But that city has just got so much beauty and I was prepared to walk, you know, 5-10 miles a day with the stroller and everything. And we got like a fraction of that, unfortunately.
We got to enjoy the Udvar Parisi. You know, I've only seen pictures. I actually think it's a location, at least one movie I can think of, probably quite a few others, but it's a beautiful one of those like traditional shopping arcades, you know, that are covered with all the glass and in kind of that classical architecture. So at least you had a very nice environ to enjoy when you're not, you know, walking through the cobblestone streets of Budapest.
Oh, no, it was gorgeous. The hotel was very comfortable. It really felt like you were in a palace. I know it was an arcade, not a palace, but it felt much more like a palace. It had nice wide halls, beautiful, beautiful staircases. Oh, just absolutely beautiful staircases. I mean, you know, we're so used to hotels, even sometimes in Europe, where, you know, they're always very space conscious. They want to get every ounce of room that they can. And this was a hotel that had a lot of nice public areas. Right outside our room was a nice little area that used to be a lounge. They did close the club lounge. It seemed like an odd space, to be honest with you. It's now just a nice little, you know, reading area on like the first floor. And so I thought it was very, very well done. The staff were especially very good. The breakfast I thought was very good. Overall, I think the hotel hits above its weight. I think it's 17,000 points is what I paid. And I think we got all that value and more. We got
a
junior
category
suite.
Category 4 or what is it?
I think it's a category 5 because I tried to use a cat 1 through 4 and I was told no. So I guess it's, okay. I guess it was like the cheaper phase of a cat.
Yeah.
Of a cat
so it must be off peak category 5. It must be what you got.
Yeah. And I want to add there's Verostaro. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But so the Parisi Udvar is about a block one way and then you turn and you go like the length of the hotel and then you're on a pedestrian walkway. And it's very nice. You can walk along this pedestrian walkway almost to the basilica, and they have a Christmas market on it. So, I mean, you could theoretically only have one block on a street with cars to get to the nearest Christmas market, which, I mean, I think is nice. You know, as a family, it's just nicer to have pedestrian streets over
nice pedestrian-friendly path to enjoy all the great architecture and the beauty of the city.
Exactly. So we stayed mostly on the Pest side. Budapest is sort of... You've got the Buda side of the river, and then you've got the Pest side. And we stayed mostly on the Pest side. We didn't get to the Buda castle. We pointed it out to my wife and daughter, and you know, everybody sort of said, ooh, ah, okay, someday. But we didn't get into the baths. Budapest is very well known for their baths.
The St. Chaney bath or something like that?
I don't know the names off the top of my head, but they have some very famous baths. But again, we were there for a short time. We also started the unfortunate slow process of sickness flowing through the family in Hungary. Not sure how or what caused it or if we brought it with us or what, but our daughter started with a cold and, you know, that sort of progressed through the family to my wife. And then I'm now fighting it myself. One thing that surprised me, so Hungary, and I should have had the name of it beforehand, but Hungary, they do not use the euro.
That actually surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, Hungary is part of Schengen. However, they are not part of the Eurozone. And so they use the Hungarian forint. And it's something like one Hungarian forint is 3/1,000ths of a dollar.
Okay. That's a weird number to have to do your math in your head, I guess.
Yeah. So what I think I ended up doing was, I think it was 3,000 forints was $10.
Okay.
I think that sounds right. 2 zeros.
And I see from the notes, you found it kind of expensive, which is, again, something that surprises me.
It surprised me too. So we regularly paid about 20 euro equivalent, or $20, I suppose, equivalent, because euros, what, 90, I think dollars, like 96 cents to a euro, something like that. Like, so, yeah. So they're almost parity. They're actually as close to parity as I think they've been in like 20 years, even more so than during the pandemic. And so, yeah, we paid like $20 a meal in some cases for just the food part. The Glühwein or mulled wine that we usually enjoy was on average 3,500 forints, which is, you know, what, $12? It was between 25 and 3,500 forints. And so you're talking, you know, call it an average of $10. Whereas we were paying about, I want to say it was between 5 and 6 euros in Austria. And we did a little stop in Bratislava. So, you know, almost double the price for the mulled wine.
Yeah. It's not, you wouldn't think that Vienna would be necessarily a very cheap city. You know, based on the standard of living or something, you would probably think the Austrians probably live just as well as the Hungarians, if not better. But yeah, I guess maybe, do you think maybe it was just you were in a pricey part of town or something?
You know, I don't know. I mean, we went to three different Christmas
sounds
markets
like Las
and
Vegas
the prices were the same.
Sounds like Las Vegas prices.
It kind of did. It kind of did. And I looked at some of the, I mean, obviously we were probably somewhat in the touristy town, right? We couldn't get far enough afield to get away from the touristy town. But still, I mean, you know, St. Stephen's Church in Vienna. You don't get more touristy than that. And they're only charging €6.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought that was a substantial, confusing difference. We did do a little bit of a pivot, though, on our trip. We were originally going to take the train from Budapest to Vienna. And after the travails of the stroller and people not feeling well, we just sort of made the call. We had gotten a really good transfer from Budapest Airport to Parisi Udvar, with, I think it was like transfers from Budapest. I'll put the one in the show notes. And so I asked them what they could do for a transfer from Budapest hotel to Vienna. And they offered a 5-hour drive. It's only like a 2.5-hour drive if you just go straight. But we got a little stop in Bratislava, Slovakia, which was fun because that ends up being my daughter's 31st country. It was a place that we fell in love with back in 2019. When we were going through IVF for the first time. And so for us, it was a walk down memory lane, but also seeing it in a different time. We'd been there in September and they had already had their Christmas markets out. And so we got to walk by the palace or the castle, I should say, the U.S. Embassy. And they've got some opera halls.
So literally a drive-by trip, huh, to Bratislava?
I mean, it was 2 hours. It was 2 hours. So, you know, we probably walked a couple of miles. We had enough time to grab a quick bite to eat and some mulled wine. And they have a different type of mulled wine that's like a hot punch, that's a spiced punch that is more traditional for them. And so we tried that. And then we ended up getting back in the car and then, you know, in almost no time. I mean, Bratislava to Vienna is like 45 minutes to an hour. You cross the border from Slovakia to Vienna probably within about 5 or 10 minutes of getting out of downtown Bratislava. It's very convenient.
It sounds like you did a tour of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
You know, it was interesting because I didn't realize some of the history. Our tour guide, aptly named Attila, was explaining that for many years, Bratislava was the seat of power for the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right? And in some cases, if I recall him correctly, like, you know, in some cases, even when Hungary kind of broke out, I think Slovakia was still sort of part of it. And so the seat of power eventually moved back to Budapest. But there were times where, you know, that seat of power, even when it was, when I guess the, was it the Austro-Hungarian Empire that includes Czechia, Czech Republic?
That's a great question. My knowledge of that part of the world's European history is I'm sure I can go on YouTube and find it, but I don't recollect it off the top of my head. I just know that that part of the world was interesting in that it had its own kind of power structure, you know, which not everybody thinks about.
No, that's true. And I need to really refresh my history knowledge, especially as my daughter's getting older. I like to be able to share that sort of information. And I just felt a little bit,
feel an attachment to that part of the area. I mean, this is not exactly your first time at the rodeo at both of these lovely Hyatt hotels that you frequented on this trip.
Yeah. And in truth, I'd probably go back to Parisi Udvar. I think there's still a lot of that city left to see. I think it's a beautiful city.
Well, maybe I'll join you sometime. I've yet to make it out to actually either of those, or all three of those countries. They're all still on my list.
You haven't been to Vienna. Wow.
I have not been to Vienna. As much as I love soccer torts and I love all the Viennese musicians, composers, you know, you love all the things about Vienna. I have never been there.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Like, you surprise me on some of the countries that you've never been to. Like, some I just assume are just like, so it's like saying you've never been to the United Kingdom.
Well, that one I have been to, but you know, unlike some of the Mr. Europe's of the world, you know, some of us just haven't quite made it out there quite as much.
You haven't been to Switzerland either, right?
I have not been to Switzerland. In fact, there's some significant countries in Europe. I haven't been to Portugal either. That's another one that's not on my list.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't been to Lisbon, only Porto, but I mean, beautiful country. Beautiful country.
Yes.
I mean, there's so much to see in Europe. I mean, and you could throw a stone and hit three countries. Yeah. I mean, as we did with this trip.
I'm going to make it there eventually. I have no doubt.
Oh, and there's no rush. There's no rush.
That's not going anywhere.
I mean, maybe the Eastern Europe part, but, you know, the rest of it, I mean, Portugal's not going anywhere.
Well, I mean, you know, we did our wonderful trip to Croatia. I mean, that's kind of a random country that we decided both to go to that one time.
And not only that, but we did Zagreb.
Yes.
Where, I mean, I don't think anybody was thinking Zagreb. Like, I had to look at a map when you're like, hey, let's go to Zagreb. Like, okay, a landlocked capital city. You know, there's, you know, couldn't we do Dubrovnik?
You know, have good flying blue miles and promo awards and one will fly, right?
And it was a lot of fun. I mean, I'd go back to Zagreb. I'd probably do that too. And then do like a day trip to that big.
Maybe not August. Special. It was hot. Actually, that entire trip was hot. If I remember.
That was June, though, by the way.
Was it June? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was like around Memorial Day.
Oh, was it really that early? It felt uncharacteristically hot everywhere. Maybe it was
It was June. It was late June. It was my wife's birthday.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Yeah, because we celebrated her birthday in Istanbul.
That's correct. That is right. And, you know, the funny thing is that is one variable thing. You know, you really can have very nice weather, you know, that's very temperate, or you could have a little heat wave going through. And I've experienced both in Europe and, you know, sometimes it could be downright cold in June, right? But, you know, you just have to prepare for whatever comes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you have to be prepared for that, whatever comes. And unfortunately or fortunately, we were prepared for that when we got to Vienna.
Oh, that's good.
So our first night in Vienna, we just sort of putzed around. We went to the Rathausplatz Christmas market, which is the biggest one by the city hall. It was so big that we stopped briefly. And then we got the heck out of there because it was very busy.
You had your fill of crowds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we didn't avoid all the crowds. We ended up going back to the Am Hof Market, which is right outside the Park Hyatt. And we ended up having a very nice dinner there. Just, you know, the standard bratwursts with some mustard and mulled wine.
Sounds very Germanic.
Much more affordable compared to the experience in Budapest. Although we didn't have any goulash in Vienna. The goulash in Budapest was wonderful.
Well, that does sound more like a Hungarian kind of dish, right, than an Austrian.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But they do a very good goulash in Vienna. Pretty much laid low that first night, just walking to some of the markets, and made it to St. Stephen's Church and just kind of a little bit around there. But we decided on, number one, we made it a point to get down to breakfast at a reasonable hour. Oh. The breakfast at the next day, which was Thanksgiving, in fact. The breakfast is just wonderful at the Park Hyatt in Vienna. They have just a wonderful spread. The service is incredible. Had some bubbles with breakfast, which is always a nice little surprise. And so we started out breakfast that way. In talking with our server, he sort of said, well, you know, my son really loves the Vienna Zoo. I take my family there, you know, like once a year. You might really enjoy that. And so we went down to the Vienna Zoo, which is the oldest zoo in Europe. They're one of like, I think, three zoos in Europe or in the world that have pandas. I'll have to fact check that. But they usually have pandas, so they're one of the few. The pandas were being swapped out, just like how we swapped them out in the U.S. earlier this year, I think. But the zoo is over by the Schönberg Palace, which is absolutely gorgeous. The grounds are just beautiful, even in November, without the flowers and everything. And they've got a wonderful Christmas market on the grounds. A little bit windy.
Seems like you can pretty much spit and you'll hit a Christmas market or a palace in Europe.
I mean, that's pretty accurate. So the zoo had, you know, just about everything you want. Koalas, rhinos, polar bears, brown bears, or black bears, I should say. My daughter got to see tigers, lions, giraffes.
Oh, my.
you know, pretty much it really felt like a smaller, slimmed down version of like the San Diego Zoo. So it was very well laid out and nobody was there, possibly because it was pouring rain and windy, which I think was probably why I caught this cold as bad as I caught it.
Yeah, I definitely was one of the hazards of traveling these days is coming back with the cold. But I like your idea of going to the zoo. I've got to say, you know, even without kids, I've been to many zoos around the world. And, you know, I find generally that they're very nice places, you know, just to go visit. I mean, like you mentioned, the San Diego Zoo. I can't think of a zoo that has a better view from it than, let's say, the Sydney Zoo.
Oh, yeah.
That's got an amazing, but it sounds like this Vienna zoo is something to put on your map as well. I mean, just the fact that they do have pandas is, you're right. It definitely puts them in the upper crust of zoos in the world. And the fact that it has that length of history, yeah, it's not exactly what I would have thought of for Vienna.
No, and it didn't even cross my mind until our waiter recommended it, and Attila recommended it to our tour guide.
Oh, okay. Two different independent recommendations. That's always good. Good
yeah,
sign.
You know, and then when I asked the doorman at the Park Hyatt, he was, you know, very in favor of it too. So, I mean, it was very clear that this is something that they feel strongly about.
Yeah. Well, I guess you couldn't get a stronger, I guess, recommendation than that. You got it from three different people. Although, yeah, I would doubt that the Park Hyatt would steer you wrong, especially one that I know you've stayed at before and praised and many other people praise. It's definitely, you know, one of the, from what it sounds like, one of the better reputation Park Hyatts in the chain.
I think so. It's built in an old bank. It's interesting. So they have a vault, the old vault. The spa is built in the old vault, or rather the pool is built in the old vault. I assume that they had to, you know, build out or dig, excavate more. But when you walk into the spa, they have the old bank vault's door and it's open and there's a window onto the pool that's underground. And it's really quite nice. It's just really cool. So we ended up getting into the pool, not something you think of in November, but it was very comfortable, very, you know, the right temperature, very relaxing. There was actually a reasonable flow of people. We probably saw about 10 people in the half hour that we were there, you know, doing laps or just coming in to be able to take a dip and then going to, they had the steam room, they had the sauna and everything.
Yeah, I mean, take advantage of those indoor pools in the wintertime.
Yeah, and the Prisi Udvar had one too. We just didn't make it there. The other interesting thing I thought, so because the crowds were a little bit much, we ended up deciding that we wanted to try to have our last meal at an actual restaurant. That's not normal for us. You know, during okay. Christmas markets, we usually just like to be out there with the masses, enjoying, you know, the spätzle, the Casa Spätzle, which is like a cheese on a potato pasta, or the bratwurst or the goulash. But we decided we wanted to do something a little bit different this time. And I'm trying to look real quick here to see if I actually remembered the place that that we ate at. And I don't have that. But we had a nice little recommendation from the hotel, and they got us, the concierge got us reservations, a nice little, it was a Jewish restaurant that had been longstanding there, even before it was a very nice area. And then I think they closed in for a little bit, and then I think in 76 they reopened. And it was very popular, the food was very good, but we had a really interesting incident there that we observed.
Tell.
There's this table of probably, I don't know, five or eight Greeks. You know, of course, they're having a nice meal. They're jovial. It was a family. They had a young preteen daughter. And the bill comes, and it's like 158.30. And so they give the waiter 160 euro. The waiter's like, okay, I give you 1.70 euro change. And the Greeks are like, no, keep it. And the waiter, like, his demeanor just completely changes. Is everything all right? Is there something wrong with your meal? He's getting very offended.
Oh, really?
Very
wow.
offended.
Okay.
And the Greeks don't understand. And at some point, the Greeks are like, but that's your tip. And the waiter's like, in Austria, tipping is typically 5 to 10%. If you give only a euro or zero, you can give zero. That's fine. But if you give 1 euro, that's the greatest insult you can do. And that diffused the situation. You know, the Greeks were very apologetic and everything. But like, you know, just observing it from, you know, one table over, it was just very interesting to see how even among Europeans, you know, they're all Schengen, they're all Eurozone. They have different, you know, tipping cultures and everything. I mean, you know, tipping is almost a third rail in so many different places. I just found that to be very, very an interesting thing to observe.
It is interesting. It is interesting to observe. And yeah, you know, very few things are more stressful about traveling than the whole tipping culture, you know?
It's so true. It's so true. And it's weird because like if, you know, this guy, his name was Harry, the waiter. If I had asked him, hey, what's the typical range? He'd be honest with me. In Greece, I had somebody who was trying to say that it was like 18 to 22%. And I'm like, this is
because you're an American.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I do that in America, not here.
Well, I mean, you know, believe it or not, you know, and some of our younger listeners won't realize this, but, you know, there are these guidebooks that had, you know, the tipping culture of the country. And, you know, actually, I think we had one. That's another person who died recently, Arthur Frommer.
I was just thinking of that. He just passed before Thanksgiving, I think.
Right. And, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, was kind of helpful was, you know, you'd get a little fact sheet and you'd say, okay, they use Celsius, they use this form of currency, the tipping culture is this. And you sometimes could you rely on that so that you wouldn't, you know, create a faux pas as you witnessed just there. But it's interesting to see that, yeah, I mean, Europe, it's an amalgamation of different cultures and, you know, clearly different cultures have different norms. So true.
So needless to say, it was an awkward situation to be, you know, nearby, but it was also entertaining, but it was also informative because, I mean, it all ended up fine, right? The Greeks tipped in properly and everything was fine, but it was just very interesting to observe that approach.
It almost sounded like I was in the comedy cellar there. You know, five Greeks walk into a Jewish restaurant and anyway.
Oh, gosh. Okay. That's going to get some sort of rating on the pod, on the episode.
I mean, is that not what happened?
No. It did. Yeah. So overall, in country, very good experience. You know, the travel to losing that stroller for a couple of days was really killer on our experience of Budapest. But, you know, now we were ready to fly home.
Yep.
And so my wife had checked us in and we got the dreaded wait listed on our boarding passes for Austrian.
That's a little odd. That's not something you're used to seeing.
I wasn't overly concerned because I'd had it before where, you know, we just didn't get seats until we got like to the gate or got to the airport. Right. This time, the gentleman who I checked in with is like, I need to get my duty manager to talk to you. And that's where I start getting that little pit in my stomach.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And so they gave us two choices. One of us, which would have been me, could fly in economy or on the nonstop, which was a 787, which we were really looking forward to. This is like a brand new seat for Austrian. I mean, you know, just like this was one of those flights that you actually like go out of your way to fly. And this was going to be the most convenient flight. It was just amazing. Or we could fly via Frankfurt, have 55 minutes on the ground. We don't remember that one from our Madrid trip, do we? A 55-minute connection that failed, that led to us not getting into Madrid until midnight. And then flying on Lufthansa 418, which has been downgauged from an A340 to a 747-400 that doesn't even have first.
It's a beautiful bird, though. It is a beautiful plane.
It is. And I had some nostalgia.
Not as much fun inside without first class, though. Yeah.
So we decided, you know, all of us fly in business class. And so we decided that we were going to take the amazing race option. We prepare ourselves. We gate checked the stroller all the way to Dulles. That was probably the first problem. We just didn't know it yet.
This was just like the trip where, you know,
the stroller mattered. The stroller had its own story. The stroller had its own travel stories, really.
I was going to say, it was like, apparently airlines don't like strollers so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in all fairness, had we not checked the stroller all the way through, we wouldn't have made our flight because it takes like 20 minutes to get the stroller out and that would have eaten into, I mean, they probably would have closed the flight before we made it to it. So we checked the stroller all the way to Dulles and then we just ran. I carried my daughter and it was funny. You know, one of those cute things that like is not necessarily pertinent to the overall story, but like between my wife and I, you know, we're dragging two rollerboards, backpack, diaper bag, and carrying our daughter. And my wife and I are kind of passing back and forth like just based
Thanksgiving
on
Mount Castle 1K.
Yeah, exactly. You know, talk about a turkey run.
That's right. There you go.
But there were times when I was starting to lose energy. You know, I was like, my calves are burning. You know, we're approaching, you know, it's just before you see the exit from Schengen. And like, I'm just about to say, oh, yeah, I can't make it. You know, and Frankfurt is a decently large airport. We arrived at the end of one of the piers. And like, I mean, we were even on the far end of like that raised Lufthansa lounge that they used to have like as the grab and go, you know, just after the pandemic. And at like a couple of different times as we're running, my daughter just presses her face to my face and her hand to my other side of my head. And just sort of, you know, it's just sort of that, hey, I know you're doing everything you can do this. And it was just like the absolute cutest thing. And then every so often she'd like look back and because my wife was a little bit farther behind because I got the longer legs. I sometimes get ahead. And she'd be like waving, hi, mama. Hi, aunt. You can do it. And like, I'm pretty sure that she was like the best cheerleader that we could have ever had to have made that flight. And we made it. We made it. It was probably like a couple of miles of jogging and speed walking, going through the customs, and then even more, you know, walking, and then four flights of stairs because they had us at a remote gate similar to when we flew out of Frankfurt back in October. And then, of course, climbing up the 747, you know, air stairs. And they only had one set of air stairs this time versus the A340 when we flew it. And so, I mean, they hold us all on this bus and then it's an absolute scrum to get up in the, you know, get up the stairs. So you end up getting onto the plane for this supposed premium product and you're like dripping in sweat. It was fulfilling though to have made the flight.
You got up the upper deck of a 747 is not a daily occurrence. So
it's
still pretty cool.
We were on the lower deck, but I walked up.
Oh, you were? Okay. Deck.
I had to get up there because it was probably the last time I was going to see it on a 747-400.
Yeah, they're not long for this world, probably.
They're tired.
They're one of the last passenger airlines to be flying the 747-400, if you ask me. I think there are very few left.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, Cathay got rid of them like 10 years ago.
Oh, a long time ago.
I think the only reason
theirs before United or something.
Yeah, I think the only reason Lufthansa is still doing it is because they can't get their new aircraft. I mean, everything's delayed.
You know, I think it's interesting. You know, you look at the airlines that have their actual own service, you know, division, you know, Lufthansa Technique. Yeah. And you look at Delta. Delta kind of does the same thing. They love holding on to really old planes because guess what? Delta has tech ops. You know, they have kind of a built-in cost structure advantage because they actually have a division that does servicing not only on their planes, but on other planes too. And to me, I wonder if that's part of why the economics make sense to them.
Well, and that's an interesting comment because I think it was the air show that just happened to comment that Lufthansa has one of everything because they have Lufthansa Technique and they need to be able to have the ability to, you know, offer that to others.
Yeah, they need to have the skill, the knowledge, the capability to service those airlines, you know, because, you know, even though they're not that many of them in passenger service, you know, there's still a ton of cargo ones and private ones and other things that are out there. So they're still going to be 747s flying for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Lufthansa is always a fun airline to fly. I'll finish my little trip report out with this. I've probably flown Lufthansa 418, I don't know, a dozen or more times. I've probably flown Lufthansa
We've flown 418 together multiple times.
Yeah, exactly. No, absolutely. I have never had a flight this bad.
Oh, wow.
The service was slow.
Oh, wow.
The food was probably the worst I've had. I mean, it took us 2 hours to get an appetizer.
Hmm.
They had a salmon dish that was overwhelming in the smell. The only redeeming aspect of this flight was the fact that they were serving Moët Chandon Imperial in business class. And I think that's because this quarter they really embraced LVMH. I think in first class they're serving Dom Pérignon now. And Moët Chandon Imperial, I think probably one of the better champagnes you can serve on board. I don't know. For me, it balances the palate even at 30,000 feet.
Yet it didn't make up for all the sins, huh? Apparently there were quite a few.
It was just one of those. I mean, and I probably just, you know, had a little negative feeling from it because, you know, being spited by Austrian.
Yeah, that would probably set the tone. And, you know, the funny thing with the flights, right? You know, you always get, you set the tone on the wrong foot and then suddenly the whole thing just kind of, you know, tilts the wrong way, right?
It did. And I started the day out really in a good mood. Like, I didn't even get really unhappy. My wife got more unhappy than I did about the Austrian thing. I was just more sad because I was really looking forward to the coffee menu and the new 787. So I'll add the last bit. To add insult to injury, I told you I had mentioned that our stroller had its travel stories of its own. Turns out that the Dulles baggage belts were experiencing problems, so they ended up having to deliver our stroller the next afternoon.
Wow, so like, comedy of errors.
Yeah. It was like one of those things of like, oh, I'm going to really have to think long and hard if I'm going to take a stroller. I have to gate check again. It was just not a fun experience.
Wow. You know, I wondered, was it just the peakiness of the Thanksgiving travel weekend, do you think? Why do you think they were so on their kind of B game instead of their A game?
I mean, our flight was half empty on the flight to Budapest. I don't know why Europe would have had any problems. I get Dulles. Dulles, I can understand. Yeah, you guys are busy on the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
I would think so, yes.
Going to Budapest when it's delivered literally to the plane, that to me, there's no excuse.
Well, maybe the overbooking of your flight from Vienna to Dulles, that could be an explanation for how it started off that way.
Well, and that's the one thing. They said because we didn't have a seat assignment, which made me think that maybe I need to buy seat assignments next time I fly Austrian. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a premium experience if you've got to like pay, if you're going to get nickel and dime.
I agree. Yeah. What a poor, I mean, yeah, to overbook business, you know, and that's your highest cabin, you know?
Yeah. I'm still going to try to fly Austrian again, but I'm not going to go out of my way unless it's
I'm definitely going to make sure I got a seat
based on this
lovely cautionary tale.
Such is life. Overall, though, I mean, I think we were really happy we did this. This is the first time we traveled for Thanksgiving in over 10 years. And I think if given the opportunity, we probably would again. I might choose to go to Asia, though, next time. you know, you get the 9 to 10 day trip. You might as well take advantage of it, is kind of my feeling.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, I was kind of lamenting not doing something a little further than Honolulu, but could have made it work. But, you know, I also, you know, thought, you know, hey, it was very short notice. I booked all this stuff very, very late, which is kind of a theme lately. I've been very much procrastinating on some of my award and travel booking. Maybe it's your bad influence and our lovely Lufthansa trip from Europe the last time, where sometimes the procrastination pays off.
It's getting harder and harder to do close in, though. I mean, I've got really nothing booked for 2025 except for that cruise. And so I'm getting nervous about MLK weekend and trying to make a trip that week.
Oh, yeah, we may have to leave some holidays behind, despite our motto and what we want to do here. There may be some federal holidays that are left behind, but, you know, it's not for lack of trying.
True, true. Well, there's still time. There's still time.
Yes, there is still time. Well, I'm glad we're able to share kind of our stories. I mean, we both had some things not go to plan on our trips, which is, I guess, maybe pretty common for Thanksgiving travel. I think it's just the nature of the beast, you know, with weather not being usually perfect and, you know, having much higher utilization of planes and seats and people and crowds and everything. You're just, I guess, more likely to have something go slightly off plan. But I think we're both, you know, we both survived. I think we'll live to fly another day. And I may not want to do a mileage run on Thanksgiving, but I definitely probably will travel again on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, it is the prime time. And if you can get out largely unscathed, I think you're a winner. I'd love to hear from our listeners, you know, any issues they encountered during their Thanksgiving, or if they happen to do a particularly interesting trip, perhaps overseas or, you know, even domestically.
Yeah, we love the comments. We'd love to hear about your adventures. And maybe we'll have you on Travel Story sometime in the future.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.